This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, how? Do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to another episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. This is episode number 101, and we're dealing with something that I think all of us who have children deal with at some time, sometimes more than others. You know, we had a reader that said, "My son, who's 9 years old, seems so sad all the time. He keeps to himself. He cries a lot, even when we try to do stuff that he likes or stuff that he asks. And he can't seem to think of anything to do by himself, but he gets upset when his brother bosses him around. So he's bored, and I'm at a loss with him." So,
ooh, been there, done that.
So the question is, okay, you've got an emotional child on your hands. What do you do about it? Is it something that you discipline? Is it something that you love them through? Is there anything at all you can do about it? That's what we want to talk about today.
And the answer is, it depends. Yes. Mm. All of that at different times.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the hard thing. You can't put your kids in a box. And I think people get in a lot of trouble when they say this behavior and this is what we're going to do, because you know what? Kids are complex.
Well, we all are complex. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I think a lot of folks start homeschooling or continue homeschooling when they realize that, hey, you know, my child is not like getting a pair of 12C shoes off a shelf. I mean, they're all different. They're all a little unique. And, you know, if I'm going to be an effective parent and if I'm going to be a loving parent, I've got to deal with them as individuals, not as ideas or patterns.
That's so true. And I think with emotions, we have to deal with them based on several different things.
Yeah.
Their personality.
Mm-hmm.
The time of life they're in,
mm-hmm.
the situation, several different factors enter in here, and we've really got to consider all of them.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing that really keyed me on this question was when she starts off and says, "My son is 9 years old." And to me, that's a gateway age. That is...
Well, it's the beginning of the preteen years, Hal.
Yeah.
And we've talked many times before.
Mm-hmm.
The preteen years are full of emotion, because what happens is those hormones start flowing,
mm-hmm.
and they feel anger, and they feel sadness, and they feel frustration, and none of it's based in what's going on around them.
Right. But they don't know that.
They don't know that.
They don't know that. And see, that's something, okay, the hormone thing is because... You know, your emotions are kind of interesting because there's a spiritual aspect to our emotions, but it's a physical aspect to them as well. And I guess sometimes it's not just the emotional, the thinking, the attitude, but it's the feeling. I mean, we have an actual physical response. And really, that's what one of the things that makes them so complex.
Well, yeah, I think we know that because we know that we women get PMS. We mm-hmm. get hormonal. We react to our hormones, but it surprises us when it happens in our kids, particularly in our kids before they show signs of changing. Now, mm-hmm. hang on. This can happen in a wide range of ages.
Yeah.
Some kids start that early puberty emotional roller coaster at 8 or 9. Others at 15 or 16.
Mm-hmm.
The average is probably around 10 to 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they can start at different ages. But yeah, definitely, there's something chemical going on there.
Yeah, and I think you point that out that when these hormones start flowing before you see the growth spurt, before you see the voicing cracking and that kind of thing, because the hormones are what drive the physical changes, and yet the hormones affect our emotions and our mental state a whole lot faster. Then they affect the way our body's growing, don't they?
They do, and sooner. And that's such a surprise, because I tell you what.
That surprised me.
My word. This age range is challenging, Hal. They jump on this emotional roller coaster and they invite you to join, and you do not want to take this ride.
No, you don't. In fact, if you're going to be a really good parent for your child in this age, you need to stay off the roller coaster. And, you know, the illustration that we use sometimes in our seminars is it's like your child, your son is a sailor in a rowboat, and the sea is just tossing him up and down and to and fro, and he's confused and he's distracted, and you need to be a point of stability. You need to be the thing that doesn't move around like the horizon.
Yeah, you need to be a harbor. You know, if you have ever been sailing, if you've ever had anything to do much with ships, two ships close together in a storm is very dangerous.
Because they're both being tossed about, and they're both on the edge of being out of control.
Out of control, and they can crash together and cause a way worse accident than one storm by itself in a one boat by itself in a storm.
Okay, so maybe that's a good first point in dealing with emotional kids is you've got to stay out of the emotions yourself. You need to be more objective and detached a little bit in order to help stabilize them.
And I know that's hard. What has helped me is two things.
Mm-hmm.
To remember that it's not, they're not getting emotional at me. Even if the emotion seems directed toward me, it's not about me. It's about what's going on inside them.
Yeah, a lot of times I don't think they have any clue.
No,
They're just all about feeling at that moment.
Or they're searching for a reason that they feel that way because they've always had a reason before. And so they look for any kind of offense that they've tucked away in their heart, maybe even from years ago.
Right.
And they drag it out as the reason they're mad today.
Because there must be some reason I feel so crummy.
And that can be really maddening. It puts us on the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got to release that stuff. We've got to just relax, calm down, and deal with the situation. Now,
mm-hmm.
I think it's important to recognize that if your 6 or 7 year old blows up and starts calling you names, some pretty rapid discipline is probably in order.
Right.
But if your preteen blows up and starts calling you names, don't try to discipline right then. They're out of control. They're irrational.
Right. They're not. I think particularly in that age, in that the pre-adolescent, we think of it as 9 to 12, but whenever it happens for your child, they're kind of not in full possession of their faculties right then. And that means that you can't discipline as if everything that came out of their mouth was thought through and was maliciously intended. I mean, sometimes, if you've ever seen a child that says something really outrageous and looks terrified, like, I can't believe that came out of my mouth. Where did that come from?
That's because he's not in control.
Because he's not. I mean, his brain is running away from him and his emotions are driving him and he's like a ship with no rudder.
And so instead, you say, hey, have a seat. Let's talk.
Mm-hmm.
And encourage him to talk about what he's feeling, explain his anger, explain what's going on, and let him talk himself out of the tree before you deal with it. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to discipline him when he needs it. But first, you're going to listen, and then you're going to talk. You're going to take him to the Word of God and help him deal with it, and then you're going to discipline at this age. Now, that age is just really hard. It's really challenging.
That is.
For nearly all kids, some of them are quieter about it and some are noisier. But very commonly with boys, we see anger primarily, although some tend more towards sadness. With girls, we tend to see sadness primarily, though some tend toward anger.
Well, and both of them have times when they're down and then times when they're irritable and touchy and, easily set off about something.
Other times when they're on top of the world, it's an emotional roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got to control ourselves, control our temper, do lots of listening,
mm-hmm.
discipline when they need it. But we talk about some kids react differently. I think it's important how to talk about some kids are just passionate from the very beginning.
There is a personality aspect to it. And there are kids, I know that there have been authors who make a big deal about different temperaments, like the old medieval philosophies talked about. But there is a tendency sometimes, a family will run toward depression or a family will run toward an ebullience, if you will, just a really upbeat, optimistic, on top of the world kind of attitude. It, you know, kids are different, and we have to kind of take that into account.
Some kids say everything that pops in their mind comes right out of their mouths.
Yeah.
Others are quieter and press their emotions down inside and hide them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one is not right and one and the other wrong. They both have consequences, sometimes unpleasant consequences.
Yeah.
But it's difficult to deal with the child to which everything is a federal case.
Yeah, you know, that we have some that are just firewall type of kids. I mean, everything, yeah. It's either the world is perfect and nothing can go wrong and it's going to be great, or that same child, another day, everybody hates me and I'm ugly and the world is awful and it will never get any better. And, you know, it's very maddening to those of us who are past those ages who have a little bit of perspective to say, you know what? In the long term, things will even out for you. You're having a bad day. That doesn't mean the end of the world as we know it, but rather to say, wow, I'm having a bad day. I hope tomorrow is better. What can I do differently? And I think that's part of what we're doing is we're teaching our kids, you know, even our emotional children, we're saying, hey, let's step back a little bit. Let's get out of the picture. Somebody said you can't see the picture when you're inside the frame. Let's step out of it just a bit and ask ourselves, you know, what's really going on here? I mean, are you hurt? You know, is there an injury? Because, I mean, the fact that you're always emotional about everything doesn't mean that sometimes you really have a good reason to be emotional. Yeah.
You know, in fact, our really emotional kids,
mm-hmm.
and boy, do we have some really emotional kids. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really super emotional kids seem to get more emotional and freaked out about the small things
mm-hmm.
than they do the really big things.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know a couple who've had, like, you know, injuries who
needed
medical treatment and they got very quiet and focused and, you know, not like them. It was like, this child is calm. That something is wrong.
Yes. You know? In fact, I told a doctor that one time.
Mm-hmm.
They said, well, you know, I just don't think anything much could be wrong mm-hmm. because... You know, this child's sitting there quiet and calm. And I said, you don't understand. This child is never quiet and calm. Something is bad wrong.
Child must be sick or hurt or something because they don't act that way.
Something is bad wrong. This child is sitting there quietly.
You know? you do have to always ask yourself, is there something going on?
Right.
Even if this one is always shooting off flares, is there something wrong this time? And sometimes you can determine real quickly, no, it's the usual
emotional
thing.
And it may be
thing.
Something physical.
Yeah.
It may be something emotional, something somebody hurt them or said something to them.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a spiritual battle they're in. But we need to do some triage and see what's really wrong and what's prompting this. Because, you know, sometimes what our kids need is a big hug, or they just need to be held.
You know,
there's nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean...
Sometimes I just need to be...
Yeah, out. Sometimes we all need that. And, you know, I was thinking about this. One of the things that amazed me when I first became a parent, first off, I thought it was amazing that moms could do it, but then I realized I could too, that you have a baby who cries, and all crying isn't the same. That you can, after a while, you get to understand, hey, this baby is crying like he's lonely, like he's hungry, like he needs a diaper change, or else this baby's mad about something, and that's a mad crying, you know. And you realize after a while that there is a difference between levels of upset and the way you should respond to him. And I guess the same is with our older kids, too.
And we've got to be really careful about our emotional response, I think, particularly for women, Hal.
Yeah.
Because, you know, God made us to be nurturers and to interact with our family and the people we have a relationship with on an emotional level. And I know that if a child gets angry, I tend to get angry.
Mm-hmm.
If a child gets sad, I tend to get sad. And I need to be really careful because some personality types react to genuine hurt with anger.
I think dads sometimes tend to override our kids' emotions because we look at them saying, oh, they're just being silly. He's just acting like a crybaby, or she's just all over emotional and she just needs to get a grip. And sometimes, you know, we don't we don't express the love that that child needs. I mean, number one, they're children. Yeah. They're not little adults. They're kids, and kids are going to act childish. And a lot of times what a kid needs is an expression of love.
Right. They need to put their arm around them, hold them, tell them it's going to be okay, pray with them. Mm-hmm. And so don't ever neglect that part. Some other things, though, that we need to think about is sometimes they need to know that they can learn to control it.
They don't have to be blown around by their emotions.
Yeah, that they don't have to blow everything that comes to their mind out of their mouth. And this is particularly, you know, when I look at their child-to-child relationships, the relationships with their friends, that's one place that a lack of emotional self-control can really hurt them. Because bullies, in particular, and boys bully one way, girls bully another way. Mm-hmm. You know, boys bully physically, girls tend to bully emotionally.
Yeah.
You know, bullies watch for that kid that can't control his emotions because they know they can jerk him around.
Well, I think even a, you know, what you would say is a good kid can be drawn into being an unkind kid to another kid just because, really? I mean, honestly, you're upset about that?
Yeah.
You know, would you be upset if I did this or if I said that? I mean, even a kid who normally would not behave that way can sometimes be drawn into that or tempted to it just because it's possible and they haven't encountered it. So, but, you know, for the child who's very emotional and is very easily upset, yeah, I agree. Because you know what? I was kind of that way when I was a little guy. You know, I was kind of sheltered growing up. I didn't have a lot of playmates like that were boys like me. And I didn't know how to deal with challenges. If I got upset, you know, the tears would come really easily. And I learned kind of the hard way being in school at the time. I kind of learned, hey, that doesn't get you sympathy. That gets you more mistreatment.
Oh, no kidding.
And so that's something we need to kind of coach our guys, particularly those of us teaching them at home, is, you know, son, there's a time to be brave. There's a time to say, ow, that hurts, but I'm not going to cry about it. And, you know, sometimes, yeah, hey, I broke my arm. I'm going to cry. Okay, that's fine. But, you know, you stump your toe or you do something.
So I heard one of the older boys coaching one of the younger boys in this the other day.
Yeah.
One of our boys is definitely in this emotional early puberty thing. And it's stressful. Anyway, one of his older brothers said, hey, look, bro, you just can't say it like that. People are going to pick on you. Use your John Wayne voice.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And he said, don't say, oh, that really hurt. Say, that really hurt. You can say the same thing in your John Wayne voice and you don't get picked on for it.
Okay. Well, that's good. And you know, that's a good thing. I think that's kind of not just discipleship. I think of it as coaching, life skills.
To say,
okay, you have an emotional response to something. Do you really want to publicize it right now?
That's the question. Do you want everybody to know? Because it makes you vulnerable. I think about that verse in Proverbs where it says that a man who cannot control his temper is like a city whose walls are torn down.
Yeah.
Because a city whose walls are torn down, anybody can get them in a fight.
From any direction.
If you have a high walls in your city
and
an army goes by, you can just shut your gates and sit there.
And the thing about walls is you've got a gate. You can leave your gate wide open. You can come and go as you please. But when the time comes to be defensive, you close that gate up and you keep some of those things in reserve. Yeah. And that's a good thing. And that goes all the way around. Sometimes you need to coach your young person. Hey, I know you're really excited that you won, that you got this award, but your brother is really hurt and disappointed that he didn't win or that his team lost or whatever. So let's not do cartwheels and whoop it up right now. Let's be kind to the one who didn't win. You know, and that's on the positive side. On the negative side, just like you say, hey, if you don't want to attract attention to yourself and make people think that you're easily upset and maybe weak, then you need to be brave. You need to, you know, kind of keep the tears for private times.
And do let them know it's okay to express your emotions in safety. You know, when you're with your mom and dad, when you're at home, it's all right to say, I'm so frustrated, and to let the tears flow and to get somebody to hug you. You know, there are safe places to express your emotions, but we've got to teach them that control so they can choose when and where to express it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And recognize, too, that the behavior you see at home may not be the behavior they're showing out in public. You know, that's something worth watching sometimes to say, hey, you know, that kid who lets it all hang out when he's at home, well, he's in a safe environment. I mean, if he's ever going to unburden everything, that's the place that he's going to do it. And it may be that when, you know, when you're at a support group meeting, when you're hanging out after church or you're in a group of other kids, they may not be behaving that way when they're out in their peer group. So that's something that's you can kind of watch for.
You know, one thing we need to talk about is sometimes other things can affect emotions as well. For example, if there's a tendency towards sadness and depression, sometimes they're not getting enough sunlight. They need vitamin D. Sometimes, you know, things like fish oil, an increase in omega-3 fatty acids can help, because those things, and even probiotics, like we talked about on the depression show a few weeks ago, that all those things can impact how our brain uses those chemicals in it.
Yeah.
And so we can help them sometimes, those really emotional kids, by probiotics, fish oil, vitamin D, things like that, just to take the edge off, you know, to make it easier for their bodies to be in balance.
Well, and the nice thing about those is they're not subject to abuse.
They're healthy stuff.
They're healthy. They're just dietary supplements, and they're not going to, you know, it's not something that you have to be really, really super cautious about.
Now, one thing you do have to be super cautious about is never, ever, ever, ever ignore a threat to commit suicide.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons that those come about. I mean, we've heard a few stories from parents, you know, that sometimes, you know, people say, well, it's a cry for attention. Well, yeah, and it ought to get attention.
It ought to get attention, because that's a life-threatening situation your child is in.
Well, honestly, even if they don't intend to carry it out, sometimes they're more successful than they planned.
Or sometimes they get egged on. Like, did you see that case just in the past few months where a so-called friend egged on another child to commit suicide?
You hear stories about that. And so, yeah, you take that absolutely as seriously as, you know, as you should.
Yeah.
As you really should.
Get help immediately.
And that's something that's beyond hey, you know, let's give them an aspirin and send them to bed.
Right. But, you know, most of us aren't dealing with that. Most of us are just dealing with the child, which is a constant source of emotional angst in the family.
You're not talking about a child with a psychosis. You're talking about a child who's just a constant
passionate
drip
about everything. Yeah. And they're passionately miserable, and they're passionately happy, and mostly passionately angry and miserable, it seems, some days, because that passionately happy doesn't bother us. And it's just frustrating. It's just hard to deal with. I think it's exhausting for a lot of moms. I know I've dealt with this. We have several of them. And I would get to the end of the day, and I just wanted to hide in a quiet place. Because it would just wear me out.
Well, again, I think a lot of it comes in that, you know, if you've determined there's not a problem, a lot of it comes in teaching them how to express or decide how to express. You know, like, because we do have some who go whoop right over the top of the moon, and they're as happy as can be, and they're singing at the top of their lungs, and they're in the next room, and they're drowning out all conscious thought. And I'll call in there, and I'll say, child, please tone it down. I love to hear you sing. I'm glad you're happy, but I'm trying to write. Or mama's trying to finish the tax return, or something we need to concentrate, and you are wiping our brains clean. Now, don't expect them to understand that, but, you know, coaching them that sometimes, you know, if you want to whistle like a skylark, maybe you need to go in the backyard with the other birds.
And, you know, the cool thing about those kids is they never lack for enthusiasm. We get people asking us, you know, my son's not interested in anything. How do I get him interested in things? How do I get him to be ambitious, you know, to have goals? The passionate kids, you don't worry about that. They are full of enthusiasm and passion and plans, and they know what they want to do. And sometimes they want to do everything.
Well, I think sometimes it's easier to channel something than it is to create it.
Yeah.
You know, that if it's not there, then you know, how do you build it up? But if there's an excess of energy and an excess of enthusiasm, then maybe your goal is to train them how to choose something to focus on, you know, how to plan something rather than just galloping off in all directions.
Let's talk for a minute, Hal, about the spiritual component here.
Mm-hmm.
Because a couple of sides. On the parent side, sometimes you just got to pray. You got to say, Lord, help me. Help me to control my own emotions so I can deal with this child.
Yeah.
Give me wisdom to know how to approach this child. Help me to remember that the wrath of man works not the righteousness of God. Because sometimes you just want to get angry and lay about you, you know.
Right.
But also, especially from the child side, because I think that the emotional time of early puberty, which usually falls in the preteen years, that emotional time is a time when kids tend to be under a lot of spiritual attack.
And that means it's a time of spiritual opportunity.
Yes.
Too. You know, that they are thinking about these things, they are worried about these things, and that's when we can come alongside and share the gospel, share the good news of forgiveness through the blood of Christ, of, you know, talk about God's grace. And yes, you feel awful and guilty because we are awful guilty people from birth, but praise God, there's hope for awful guilty people like us.
Yes, that Jesus died for us and that we can lay all those burdens at the foot of the cross and leave them there.
You know, and what a great illustration, you know, from those early chapters of Pilgrim's Progress. If you've never read that, it's interesting. It's a good story. And just even a small child can understand that those first scenes where Pilgrim is feeling so downtrodden and he's carrying this huge burden, this load on his back. And at the point of conversion, it's all cut loose. He's set free. All of this weight is just rolled off. And that's what our salvation is, that burden is taken off of our shoulders. It's put on the back of Christ. But he's got broad shoulders to carry these things that we don't. And, you know, that's an illustration that your children can, you know, even a small child can understand that. And so, yeah, we need to take that into account, that sometimes they're feeling uncertain. Maybe they've got a new fear of death, and they may not understand it. They may be afraid of the dark.
That's very common in 5 and 6 year olds.
Yes, it is.
Because they suddenly realize that there is a dangerous world out there.
Yeah.
That death is out there and that people die and they don't come back here.
Mm-hmm.
And they also begin to realize that there's a spiritual world.
And that's a time when we need to introduce them to the Holy Spirit, to God's world.
And then again, in the preteen years, they often have spiritual doubts. They're beginning to realize that they're people who believe other things than their parents taught them.
Mm-hmm.
They're wondering if the Word of God is true. And lots of times they're feeling too, my parents don't like me. They don't understand me.
Well,
nobody cares. They're under temptation. We've got to reach in there and show them we care, show them we understand, and lead them to answers, because we have a reasonable faith with lots and lots of reason to believe. And we need to help our kids through this time so that they can make their faith their own.
Yeah. And I think too, especially with the older kids, sometimes I think there's almost a test involved. It's almost as if, do you love me enough to put up with me?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm going to unload this stuff because I got to do something, and I don't know if you're going to love me enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we can love them through these things. Now, the nice thing is, you know, I think for most kids, especially the pre-adolescent stuff, they do grow, and typically they resolve a lot of this upheaval. You know, we want to help guide them into resolving it in God's favor, you know, to follow Christ, but to recognize that, hey, my child hasn't lost his mind and he's going to live the rest of his life in this whirlwind.
I had at least 5 of these conversations this past weekend.
No kid. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I was at the 2-to-1 conference. It's a blogging conference for women, and had at least 5 conversations with women who felt like their preteens were losing their minds.
And the answer is no, they lost them already, but they're coming back. That's the important thing.
And there's still emotional bumps after that. You know, I think that senior year when they're trying to make decisions about life, it's just so frightening that you tend to see a lot of emotionalism because of the stress they're under during that time.
Yeah, I think we do.
But let's wrap this up. folks, there's spiritual there's spiritual impact on their emotions. Take them to Christ. Bring them to the to grace. That's the only answer.
There's a physical component to emotions. You know, make sure that they're getting the vitamins they need, that they get adequate rest, that you know, that that the things which may be upsetting them physically on the inside are dealt with, so you can deal with, maybe deal with the spiritual side more effectively.
And sometimes there really is something wrong. Sometimes there's something wrong in their lives. They've been hurt emotionally, physically, and they need your love and comfort. Home needs to be the kind of place where you get your wounds bound up.
That's right. You know, final thought on this is you can have feelings that are real, that are just overwhelming, and you don't know why, and they may not be based on any reality, but they sure feel like it. And you know what? We can go to our kids with that understanding to say, this child, it is totally delusional, but it feels real to them. And so we can show that sympathy of a child who is feeling awful and maybe help them sort out why, and maybe help them get past it. But understanding they do need love.
And they need us to control ourselves. Somebody's got to be the adult around here, and it's not going to be them.
That's it. One of our slogans, somebody has got to be the adult. Well, look, we appreciate you joining us here. We're here every Monday night.
And I want to invite them, if you're thinking, oh my word, they're talking about my child, and you've got a child in that 8 to 16 range that this can hit, what you need is Boot Camp 9 to 12. This is our exclusive, wonderful online class series for parents of preteen kids or kids around that age, because people will experience it at different ages. And it shares everything we wish we'd known when our older kids were that age, because, you know, I didn't handle it all that well sometimes with our older kids.
Well, we were newer parents then. First time we'd been parents of a preteen.
And so we want to share some of those things we've learned with you so that you can handle this time period in a godly way, because it's critical. It's foundational. And if you can get through this preteen period with the parent-child bond intact, you know what? The teen years tend to get better and better.
You know what? You can get more information about this on our website. Go to raisingrealmen.com/bootcamp. And that's where we talk about the boot camp 9 to 12. You say, well, my child's not a preteen. My child's a six-year-old now, and I can't figure him out. We also have our boyhood boot camp,
which starts Thursday.
It starts this Thursday coming up. Yeah. Yes, if you're listening in real time. And so that one, raisingrealmen.com/boyhood. And maybe you've got a teenager who's having all sorts of emotional upset because life is coming too fast for them to deal with. Okay. We have a new program called Pre-Flight. It's underway, but recordings are available.
And they can watch the recordings. It also records video. But it's for teens and their parents, boys and girls. Come join us.
That's right. RaisingRealMen.com/Pre-Flight. Look, we appreciate you joining us. We are here every week because we want to help take biblical principles into practical application in your family. So we thank you for joining us and hope you'll come back again. Until next time, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
We'll talk to you later.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/HalandMelanie. Or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.